Blog Talk Radio.
Are you sitting out there lonely and feeling left out? Do you want to be included in the world of the paranormal, but really don't know how? We have the paranormal solution for you. Call us at 1-800-RENT-A-GHOST. We can deliver everything from a timid spirit that walks the halls or one that simply opens a cabinet door. Or you can get a feisty poltergeist that can trash your house and really liven things up. We can get you as many shadow people as you need to have a party. Do you have too many unwanted friends or family just barging in? Our screaming and wailing banshee will guarantee that after hearing some deafening anguish, they will never return. Impress your friends or take revenge with a specter of death hovering over your dinner table or theirs. Or if you're lonely, you might like a simple attachment that follows you everywhere. EVPs? Choose from our line of celebrity voices. What investigator would not want to hear Jim Morrison or Whitney Houston? Or maybe Michael Jackson or Kurt Cobain? Order now and get 3 free orbs. We are 1-800-RENT-A-GHOST. Not responsible for damage caused by poltergeist activity, divorce, loss of job, sleep deprivation, bedwetting, uncontrolled vomiting, suicide, or the possibility of being hospitalized for insanity. And most important, there will be no returns.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, as usual, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Yeah, I decided to start the show off a little bit different this evening. I'm sitting on a bunch of audio files that we used to play on the show and kind of going through them. So I decided to throw a little comedy in there. There really is no Rent-A-Ghost, in case anybody was wanting to Rent-A-Ghost. It's fictitious. That is our friend and past guest, Ed Becker, author of True Haunting and a really great guy. And God, he's got a great voice, doesn't he, Sherry?
He sure does. That was kind of funny about lots of jobs and all the different ramifications that can happen in actuality. Nothing to joke about, but it was kind of funny when I heard that.
Well, you have to be humorous at times because the paranormal, as we both know, and talking with our guests can be kind of serious and a Debbie Downer, but it can also be exciting and positive as well.
Yes, it can be, and sorry for having a sick sense of humor. I just thought it was kind of funny, you know, because I've never heard of something like that. So it was quite interesting. I'm really glad. It was a really good mix-up, and, you know, just take it lightly, and it's all funny. It's all fun. It's all good. So, but I want to introduce our guest tonight. Oh, Jason, how have you been? I got to, before I kick into our guest tonight, How was your week?
It was pretty good. You know, my weeks kind of just drag on. They're monotonous, and I work and sleep, and that's it. There's really not a whole lot to report on. It's kind of the same old thing. Nothing great, but nothing terrible either, so I'm thankful for nothing negative happening. But it's just been boring.
Yeah, I'm glad. I am so glad. And for those of you that don't know this, but I was invited with the Portland, to work with the Portland Paranormal Group, and I was doing some readings. I was really lucky to be able to, felt very privileged to be able to be asked to participate and do some readings, and we took a tour on the Harvey's Comedy Club right underneath. They opened up the Shanghai Tunnel, that part of the Shanghai Tunnels they'd never opened to the public before. So I had the privilege to actually be one of the first people to actually go down, not the night of the event, but the night before. So it was quite interesting in how the energies was out there, and you can feel the history and a lot of grief and a lot of depression. So one of these days, Jason, we have to go down there, and we'll get a hold of the owner, and I'll call him, and we can, you know, do a paranormal investigation and maybe bring James Cloud in from Medford and, you know, do a big good thing. So we'll see what happens.
So you said you felt some stuff down there. Can you elaborate for a second on that? Like, what did you feel? Was it like, you know, when you walk into some place that's got real negative energy and it feels like walking into a wall? Was it like that? Or was it really palpable? What was that like?
And what I felt was very, if you go under, well, if you, I should go and publish it on the paranormal page, our Paranormal Horizons. But when I went down there, it was very heavy. The energy was very thick and very heavy. And as soon as you walk in, there's these little rooms, and you can tell that these rooms were like kind of like, the first thing my impression was that they were like bedrooms. And I didn't know the history of the Shanghai Tunnel. I've never been there. I just heard about it, but I never knew really about the history. So I went in there with an open mind, just opened up my psychic abilities and mediumship abilities, and I just opened up and I just like felt like a lot of screaming. I mean, no kidding. It was like people were literally screaming, and it was like, you know, very, not only screaming, but it was a lot of depression. And then there was this guy that was down there. He was very angry. He didn't want us to be down there. He didn't want Natalie and I to be there at all. I don't know what happened, but he was watching out for us. So it was like we, you know, did the tour, and, you know, I just said, hey, we're just going to just check it out, but we're not going to harm you. And we got out of there. But that night, it was interesting because after I did my readings, I was so tired. I was so depleted. My energy was drained like crazy. So, anyway.
Wow, yeah. I've never been down there. I've had opportunities to go, but I never have. And for the sake of the listeners, there are these tunnels beneath Portland where they used to, people that own the bars and stuff used to drug people, and then they would wake up on ships, so they'd be shanghaied and basically forced labor on ships and all sorts of sketchy stuff that happened back in, I guess, the 1800s, wasn't it?
That is correct. That is correct. And it was a brothel, a lot of drinking, a lot of gambling, a lot of drugs, opium. We found opium bottles. It was interesting. The whole thing was just so rich in history, but it's also very depressing, and I feel that the souls are just, there's still some souls trapped there. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, we'll have to go and check it out sometime together. And I'm not psychic like you are, but it would still be very interesting.
Oh, you'll feel the difference in the energy. Totally. From where the bar is going down there, total. I know you will. Okay. We're going to bring on Angela Pennington. She is a Vedic astrologer. And I don't know, Jason, I've been here for 2 years now. But I don't know if you ever had an astrologist come out, but this is really going to be very different because she's a Vedic. And my understanding is Vedic is Eastern Indian. You know, we talk about Western astrology. We talk about Chinese astrology. But Vedic astrology is something very unique, and I would like to bring her on so she can explain what that is and how can we learn from that. What can we do as listeners, what can we, you know, what kind of things that we can do to say, oh, yeah, am I a Leo or am I, a, you know, that kind of thing. So that's going to be quite interesting. So we want to bring her on.
Get her on right now.
Hi, Sherry.
Angela.
Hi, Jason.
Hey.
Hi, you guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I've just been enjoying hearing about the Shanghai tunnels. I can't wait for your show on that. It's such an interesting subject. And Portland is so rich in that history. So it's really going to be amazing.
It's very much
I can't wait to go down there. I've had friends that have gone down there. And I know Ghost Adventures, I think a while back, did an episode down there. But the history alone, even if you don't go for like any sort of paranormal thing, the history alone of Portland and the Shanghai tunnels is super interesting.
You know, I used to own a house right down by the water in the southeast area of Portland. And when I moved into that house, it was haunted. And you could go downstairs and put your ear up against the basement wall and hear like the airflow going through. I believe there was a tunnel just on the other side of that wall. And a lot of crazy things happened in that house. But I always thought that if I would have just broken out that brick, I would have been able to step right into one of the tunnels. I think they go pretty deep into Portland, and they lead all the way down to the water. So it's very, very fascinating.
Very much so.
I would have broken the wall down. If I owned the house, I would have been super curious. There could be like a treasure chest or, you know, those tunnels. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. I wish I would have now, but...
Or I guess you could release some sort of ancient evil, too. So maybe it's not a good idea.
I know, right?
So now Sherry kind of gave you a brief intro. And so I was hoping you can kind of just give an intro more in depth on who you are and what you do.
Sure. I'm a Vedic astrologer. And Vedic astrology has commonly been referred to as Eastern or Hindu astrology. It actually originates in India, and it has been recorded in sacred texts. People have seen records of it as far back as 5,000 years ago. So it's a very, very old astrology technique and a system, actually not even a technique, it's a system. And it's a little bit different than Western. There's some components that are different, but it's very thoughtful. In India, they use the system to determine marriage dates, who people could successfully be married to, like will the relationship work. So it's used for a lot of really practical things. In the West, we have a tendency to work with astrology in a way that will lift our career and really focus energy on us. But in other countries, they use the systems to navigate, you know, life situations such as marriage, children, security, financial securities, this sort of thing.
Is there any, like, I don't know, is there anything that establishes that by using the astrology that these relationships or whatever work out more so than not? I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, not proof, but like, is there anything that establishes that it's actually helpful to do the astrology thing, and that it, when you do it and you follow the rules or whatever, that things are more successful? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, statistically, if we look at India versus American marriages, they have a higher, we have a much higher divorce rate. I think we're at like 50% divorce rate in this country. India has a much lower divorce rate. But it also, that is a cultural thing as well. People know when they go into marriage, they're going for life. So that has a lot to do with it. And also, Vedic astrology is a holistic system. So it brings in, you know, health, it brings in placement, like Vastu, which is similar to Feng Shui, and brings it all together so people are living very holistically. That's one of the primary differences, I think. But in the West, one of the ways that we can really maximize the benefits of this, so as far as statistic analysis, I don't really have anything like that. But one thing I do know is that when we use astrology to sort of navigate our lives, we can avoid obstacles, and when we know we're facing a challenge, we can diminish the difficulty of it, if that makes sense, and make it a little easier to get to the other side. I truly believe when I meet with clients that no matter what they're going through, as long as they know that there is light at the end of that tunnel, and I can tell them when they're going to see that light, they can get through anything. So that's one of the perks to astrology is being able to, you know, kind of show people where the challenges are coming from and maybe some things they can do to think differently or to maybe refocus their perception or change how they're moving through their experience in some way. It's very healing.
So can that be free will? Is there, you know, as a psychic or even a medium, is there you know, a when you do a reading, or any astrologer, is there a chance of free will? So if you say that these are mapped out, can that be changed if they choose to?
So I believe, now this is my personal bias, my personal belief, based on what I've seen. I believe that sometimes we're going to face a challenge no matter what. We're going to have to move through something. Maybe we don't have a choice in having to face it. However, we can certainly choose how we our attitude. We can choose to take the high road versus the low road. And this is where we get into karma. You know, fate, free will, it's all tied together. And that is a big subject on its own. but it definitely, one of the things about the idea of fate and free will, and I'll keep this part really short because it is a very deep subject, and that is that the moon, for example, the moon is our mind in Vedic astrology, but it's also the way we perceive our experiences and the things around us. So, for example, if I perceive that I have a positive relationship with you, I think good things about you. If I perceive I have a negative relationship with you, I'm going to think bad things about you. If I hear a situation or I see that a certain situation, let's say I get a letter from the IRS, and all of a sudden I perceive, oh, I have a problem with the IRS. It doesn't take much for me to change my viewpoint and say, you know, maybe this is a form letter. I should just call them and find out why they're contacting me. So the way that we filter and view our world and our life and our relationships and our experiences all come through the moon. And so if we look at a chart and we see that the moon is a little challenged in that chart, meaning maybe there's a malefic aspect to it or it's not very well placed or it's really, really weak, people might have a little trouble processing that. So they might have trouble seeing their options in life.
So let me ask you, just like Chinese astrology or Native American, does it depend on the month that you're born that you can say, okay, if you're born in January, you're going to be this, you're going to be a beaver, or you're going to be an animal? How is that in relation to Vedic astrology?
Well, the systems are a little bit different. The Western system is based on the seasons, essentially, and the Vedic system is based on the stars. So the systems overlap about the second or the third week of the month. So basically, if you are born between the 15th and the 20th of any given month, your sun sign is probably going to stay the same in the Western and Eastern system. It'll be the same, give or take a day or so. If you're born outside of that, chances are your sun sign is going to change because there's a 24-degree difference in between the systems. And so that can really affect people. It can affect their identity, actually. So, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just say what the Vedic calendar dates are so maybe your listeners can, you know, hear the dates and know if they can, if their sun sign would be a little different, basically.
Right. Well, like me, I'm born August 20th. So am I just right on the cusp?
If your birthday is August 20th, you would be a Leo.
Okay.
So, for example, if our Vedic calendar date starts when the sun actually moves into Aries, that would begin on April 13th, not March 21st. So in the Western calendar, it'll be March 21st to April 21st would be Aries, whereas for us it would be April 13th to May 14th. So that 24-degree difference, or that 24 degrees, does make a difference in, you know, how people would view their sun sign. For example, if someone is born on March or like April 5th, for example, they would be considered a Pisces in Vedic. So we would look at their sun in Pisces and form conclusions about their personality based on that.
I'm
what about
Leo
you,
as well.
Where do you fall? You're August
2. I'm July 24th.
Oh, July 24th. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a Cancer in the Vedic system.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, wow.
Because in America, system, I'm a Leo.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, you know, both systems are relevant, and people are going to experience, you know, they're going to identify largely, I mean, they're going to see the commonalities in both of them. Many people will. I'll give you an example. Like, when I was a child, I never could understand why people would consider me a Virgo. I didn't feel like a Virgo. There's base qualities about Virgo that I really do not embody at all. But I could identify a little bit with it. When I went into the Vedic system, I was a Leo, and that fit me much, much more profoundly, like just my identity, how I view myself. But I do have a planet in Virgo, so I could still see how those energies come through, but in a little bit different way. When I meet with people, about, I'd say probably 60%, 65%, 70% of my clients, their sun signs actually change. And out of those, about 50% get a little bit wigged out about it. They're like, I just don't know if I can, this is a lot for me to handle. So sometimes they have to go and they have to process for a couple of days. And then we sit down and we start talking about what that sign brings to them and how they could see the divine energy in that new sign and how they can integrate it into their personality. And it really does make a difference. I tell people, you don't have to let go of your Western sign. Just embrace maybe a new sign if you need to. So it works out pretty good for people generally. But it just goes to show how tied we are, how much we're tied into that being our identity. You know,
that's what I feel. I like to be, the positive of all signs. I mean, just because, you know, you're a sign, you're exactly right. People say, oh, yeah, I'm an Aquarius, and this is me, and this is me. You know, it's just like you're putting yourself in labels instead of being balanced.
Exactly.
You want to be the good parts of everything and try and tone down or work down the bad things, but, you know, you kind of pigeonhole yourself and, it's like shooting yourself in the foot.
And one of the things is that, you know, the ascendant, which we call the Lagna, says a lot about your personality. That's really one of the first things I look at is the ascendant, because the ascendant puts an energy throughout your entire astrology chart. So if you have a really weak sun, maybe your sun's in Leo, but if it's really weak, it's not going to express the way a really strong ascendant would.
So is it a rising sign? Is that what it is? Is that what an ascendant is? That's not a moon sign, correct?
No, that's not your moon sign. Your moon sign is also very important because it's, like I mentioned, it's your perception. It's the way you perceive your experience. And it's emotions. It's your heart, your mother, nurturing. It's the way that you fill your cup, basically. And so some people really can connect if they have a really good moon. They put other people first. They're very mindful, very generous. They're very nurturing with others. We all know people like that you can always go to them and get a little bit of nurturing. You know, they'll give you that extra hug or that little hot tea and say, oh, sit down, relax, you know. That is a really positive thing to have in a chart. It's sometimes that moon is a little harsher. It's a little bit more motherly in the sense it's going to define boundaries for people a little bit more. So the moon is really important. One of the things in astrology that I think just generally when people buy books, you know, what is your sun sign, what is your moon sign, that gets overlooked is the power of the other planets that are aspecting and the placement in the chart, because not all planets work the same way. So, for example, you could have an exalted Venus in your chart and somebody else can have an exalted Venus, and you're both going to have certain qualities that are similar, but depending on the placement, the expression of it will be a little bit different, and the focal point of it will be a little bit different. So,
wow.
That's
really
important.
So we talked about this earlier a couple days ago when we were talking, what about people? We were saying, what about people that are adopted, and how do you deal with that?
Well, not everyone knows their time of birth or their place of birth, and we did talk about this. And one of the things I wanted to point out, a couple things about this. One is that at least 50% of the charts I look at, the times are a little bit off. I've gotten to the point where I automatically rectify a chart when I look at it now, because we have to have an accurate birth time. If you're adopted, a lot of adoptees will know the day they're born. They just won't know the time they're born. So when we look at that, we can go and use something called the Vimshodari Dasha system. And what that does is it allows me to look through planetary cycle at events in your life to kind of narrow down and rectify the chart. Now, the hard one is when you don't know your birth date and you don't know your time. When that happens, it makes a rectification pretty much impossible, at least as far as my knowledge base goes. And in that case, I use a different system. What I do is I have the client ask a question, and I use a system called Prashna, which is when you cast a chart for the moment the astrologer hears the question. So I tell my client, go think about your questions, get really clear on them, and then come with a good heart and ask me the question, and I will cast a chart at that time. And then we'll analyze that chart to find the answers to the question. And that works. That's a very effective system for answering questions to people who don't know their date or time of birth.
You know, I'm adopted, and interestingly, just not too long ago, I was looking through my birth records, which are kind of sparse, but it did have the time on there. I was born at 3:13 p.m. What that means, I don't know, but I just happened to notice that. So I'm one of these adopted people that knows what time. Now, whether that's accurate or not, I have no idea, but that's what it says on it.
Well, it's probably pretty close. When it's actually recorded, it could be pretty close. Usually, I think a lot of times when a baby's born, the nurses and the doctors are so busy, they don't actually write the time until they know everything's managed, and then they go and fill out the paperwork. Because sometimes when I adjust the time, I might the longest one I've ever had has been 40 minutes. The time was off by 40 minutes. But when I delivered the consultation to the client, she's like, oh, my gosh, that sounds right. I mean, that fits, you know. So
wow.
So she started using that time as her birth time because it worked for her. I could look through the planetary cycles and see align events perfectly. So it really worked for her. But I will tell you this much: if you're born in the afternoon, or during the day, they say that people are more outgoing. People who are born at night have a tendency to be more reserved. So Jason, you're probably an outgoing person.
Wow.
I don't know. I always thought of myself as being reserved, but maybe I'm outgoing and I just don't know it.
Well, you are doing radio.
Well, there you go. That's true. Maybe I am outgoing. What do you think, Sherry? Do you think I'm outgoing? Because I think I'm kind of an introvert.
You're out, Jason. You're outgoing when you need to be, but I know you. And your other personality is you really don't want to be around people. To be honest with you, so I see that other part of you where you know you appear to be outgoing, but if it was your choice, you'd rather be by yourself, and you're not in seclusion. I would say you just don't want to deal with people and drama and everything. That's what I see of you. Is that correct, Jason?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm outgoing when I want to be outgoing.
Exactly. So that's what I see.
But,
I mean, it's just like
that. It'd be interesting to look at your moon.
So now with the astrology,
you know, I've been told
that
I have my and I don't know if this is true or not because there's so many variables as far as dates and times, but I've been told that my rising sign, which how I appear to others, is an Aries. And then my moon sign is Libra, and then my sun sign is Leo. But in Chinese astrology, I'm a dog, which corresponds to the temperament and the personality of Libra. So, you know, I see myself, I always want to have balance, but then I'm part of, you know, I'm a mixture. I don't want to put myself in the cubbyhole and say, well, I'm a Leo, and this is, you know, identify myself with this. No, I want to be balanced. I want to be able to take all the signs that are good and just take that and be a whole person in balance. So,
well, all the signs are good. This is the thing. You know, like what
yeah.
I tell people is that we have 12 primary zodiac signs that we look at, of course, in the chart. And all of those are inside of us, every single one of them. But what makes the difference is where the planets are located, because the planets represent like different parts of our mind, the way we think, the way we connect with people. And those are affected by whatever house and zodiac sign they're in. So we all have that beautiful Libra, and we all have Leo and all of these amazing signs. It's just the degree to which they're active in our mind and the way we express them is different.
Exactly.
Now, astrology
so
can be...
So what happens, let me ask you this, Angela, that if something happens, where do you ever find something that's really tragic or you see some difficulties, are you honest in telling them that you might have some losses in income or maybe a loss in a family member? Can that show up? I don't know, but I'm just not only asking for myself, but maybe asking for the listeners.
Well, first let me say this. No astrologer should be predicting death, because that's God's realm. I don't believe that anyone should predict death. And if they do, shame on them. And that's my personal bias on that. When people come to see me, they usually come to see me because life is rough. They don't come to me when everything's fabulous. No one needs spiritual support when everything is good. They're too busy having a good time. They come to see me usually when they're going through a major life shift, and I can see that through the planetary cycles of Imshoteri. For example, when people come to see me for the first time, the majority of them are either going into a Saturn cycle, or they're in a Saturn cycle and they're moving through it and going through great change, or they're coming into a K2 cycle, or it's going to be a malefic planet that they're dealing with. And also, when we're going through planetary cycles, we can usually feel those changes coming on, about depending if it's like if we're leaving Jupiter and we're going into Saturn, we can feel that a couple of years in advance. If we're going into a lighter cycle, we feel it probably, 6 months early or maybe a year at tops. So it just kind of depends. As far as letting people know about tragic events, well, I don't really view a change in your job or a change in your income as a tragic event. I view it as a normal life change. As we move through life, we change jobs. Our income goes up and down. That's just the way it is. And people want to know, when is my income going to improve? Or I'm really looking for a good job and I've got 3 interviews, Angela. Who do I go with? There's a technique in Vedic astrology, and it's called Nama Nakshatra. And in Nama Nakshatra, you get, there are root sounds for all of the zodiac signs. And it's really broken down. It's a beautiful system. But you can look to see where the planets are placed and in what nakshatra and identify sounds. So sometimes if people are trying to make a decision about a job, for example, and maybe they've interviewed at 2 or 3 places, I can look to see where the sounds. And a lot of times a client will go, oh, that sounds like this company. The first 3 letters are the same, or the sound you're giving me matches this company I interviewed with. And if everything's well placed in the chart, we know that that is a real potential job offering for them. And so that's one of the ways in which we can use it. Sherry, to be honest with you, I try always to keep everything on a positive and upbeat tone. I want everyone to feel empowered when they leave and feel like they have gained some knowledge that they can use to lift themselves up and improve their life in some way or improve their circumstance in some way.
That's great. That's wonderful. Wow. So what do you think it is now that we're going into the full moon? It was a full moon. We're entering a new phase. And so my understanding, we are now in the full moon of Taurus. So how is that? How is going to be affecting everybody, or just affecting the planet in general, Angela?
Well, first let me say that the cycle actually starts on a dark moon or a new moon, and right now the moon is in Taurus, which is its sign of exaltation. It's beyond its degree of exaltation. I think the moon right now, if I remember correctly, is like at 14 degrees or 15 degrees Taurus. So we do have a beautiful moon right now. When the moon is well placed, when it's just past full, that's auspicious. and it helps us connect. So when people are at home, they're with their families, they're connecting on a more positive level. We also have a really great placement right now. Mercury and Mars are exchanging signs, and that is considered auspicious when two planets exchange signs. And so that lifts up and improves communication, and people are able to work together to achieve things. So if, you know, you and your husband, for example, decided, you know, you wanted to clean out the garage this weekend, it was probably successful because you were able to work together and communicate well as to where you wanted things to be. As far as planetary cycles generally and where we're at, we went through kind of a rough summer. It's been a rough year, actually. Over the summertime, we had, Saturn ended up going from retrograde to direct. We had Jupiter change signs in September, which whenever Jupiter changes signs, that's big. We had the nodal axis, which are kind of the karma keys, change signs in August, September. Saturn right now has just moved into Sagittarius. He's almost in a full degree. November 7th, he'll be in a full degree, and this is going to calm a lot down. Saturn can be, when Saturn's not well placed, he really shakes stuff up. We saw that over the summer with all this political stuff. He was in the sign of Scorpio before that, and generally speaking, Mars is the battle. Saturn can be the battlefield. They're mortal enemies. We don't really like them having a relationship in the chart. It's not considered the most auspicious. But things are calming down now. Saturn's moved into, he's moving into Sagittarius. That's a much better placement for him. So life is going to relax a little bit for people and probably reduce all of the, it's going to help reduce some of the anxiety people have had over the summer and basically all year, really.
I know when I spent many years catching shoplifters, and I know whenever there was a full moon, and I think police officers also notice that people get weird when there's a full moon. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's certain planetary alignments that affect people probably on some sort of subconscious level. I don't think it's really outside the realm of possibility that certain alignments, you know, have an effect on us.
Oh, they absolutely do. Lunar comes from lunacy, and it's well documented that people, especially if the moon is full and not in the most auspicious sign, a lot of crazy stuff can happen. People get a little crazy. one of the things that's really popular is Mercury retrograde. Lots of people know what that is now.
I don't know what that is.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
what is that?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know, but I'll go over it anyways. Mercury retrograde is when Mercury appears to be moving backwards in the sky. And what happens is it disrupts communications. It happens 3 to 4 times in a year, and when it does, it lasts for about 3 weeks. And Mercury is sort of how our thought process works. It's how we analyze and how we essentially break things down and, you know, box them and look at things and calculate things. And when it's retrograding, it's a little tough. Especially people who are ruled by Mercury have a tough time sort of putting their words together or thinking things through. They might invert letters or numbers a little bit more. It can be a tough time. If you're born in a Mercury retrograde, it's a great time for you. But for those who are not, it can be rough. Sometimes what will happen is if Mercury is being affected by, like, the South Node, for example, we'll have computers break down. If Mercury is being affected by Mars, then we'll have a lot of accidents. You'll hear tons and tons of sirens. So it can really disrupt our daily life. Fortunately, that only happens 3 to 4 times a year. and when any planet, all the planets eventually will go retrograde. Mars retrogrades and Saturn retrogrades, and, you know, they all do it. And when they do, it's just a time for us to stop, rethink, redo. All the resupply, that's pretty common among all astrologers. They just tell people, well, don't sign anything, don't initiate any contracts, you know, don't buy a house, don't make an offer on a house during a Mercury retrograde. Just kind of sit back, plan, rethink, write that book you've always planned on writing. But when Mercury goes direct, you're probably going to go back and rewrite it. You'll go back and you'll make changes. So be prepared for that.
Wow.
Now, we just had that eclipse. What, does that fall into the whole astrology thing? Is there any meaning to that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We had a really big, powerful eclipse in August. That was having a political... I mean, we looked at that mainly politically because it was having a huge impact. And we were able to see that, you know, current administration was going to be impacted. And now that we're kind of moving beyond that and Jupiter's changed signs and Saturn's settling down into Sagittarius, now we're seeing, you know, all this information come out, and we see the investigations of Mueller and, you know, his findings. We're going to see more and more of this as all the planets improve their positions. So this is going to be ongoing, and I believe that that's related to this eclipse that we had. President Donald Trump was directly impacted by the eclipse. So it's kind of a biggie.
I slept through it. I was an eclipse party pooper. I didn't pay any attention to it whatsoever. I'm terrible. But I would imagine that it does have some significant effect. And I don't know. It's just all very interesting. And like I said, I don't doubt that the planetary alignments have some sort of effect. But what you were saying earlier, it sounds like things are improving planetarily. Was that correct?
They are. I think they are, in my opinion, for right now. One of the things, I just want to mention the impact of eclipses, if I could. What eclipses do is they essentially block light from us. And we're all divine beings, and we have this, you know, beautiful solar light within us, you know, our divine light. And this divine light connects us to all things. And when we have an eclipse, when either the ascending or the descending node cut light, that affects us on a very deep level. It usually spotlights a part of our personal lives that needs some attention. So, for example, if there's listeners who suddenly, you know, they suddenly realize they had a water leak in their house, it's going to need immediate attention. They'll discover that. Maybe prior to the eclipse, they knew that they were going to have to replace some piping. But when the plumber came in and looked in the wall, he said, "Oh my gosh, this is so much worse than I realized." And so, you know, you have to handle things get bigger basically under an eclipse. And sometimes things that you didn't even know were a challenge will come out. So this is one of the things that eclipses can do, is they can spotlight an area of your life. So if the eclipse is affecting, for example, your second house, it could very well be plumbing problems or, you know, issues in your house of this nature. If that happens in your seventh house, your relationships could be affected. Maybe you'll see a friendship leave your life, or maybe you'll have some troubles with your husband or your wife. So that's really where the spotlight. They're really a spotlight. They're like a flag of attention.
Isn't there, like, in ancient times, wasn't it considered a bad omen when there was a eclipse? I don't know. I thought I heard that somewhere, read it somewhere back, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah,
eclipses
weren't
a good thing.
Yeah, well, you know, they're always challenging. Just we're all affected, you know, to different degrees. But yeah, you know, in the old days, there's actually a limb of the Vedas called Nimitta, and Nimitta is specifically about things that happen that maybe are not auspicious or considered a portent to something more negative. For example, comets or lightning strikes. These would all be things that we could look at the date and the time and look at the location in the chart and see the potential for challenge.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going to be talking about that subject at United Astrology Conference next year in Chicago. That's what my talk's going to be on.
So now, doing astrology, so you can really apply that when somebody comes to see you. Can you mainly apply it towards like big events or big decisions? Are there things people can do on their own at home where they can follow a chart and for just making little daily decisions? Is it something that's applicable on a smaller level?
Oh yeah. One thing I love about astrology is we have another system. It's called the nakshatras, and the nakshatras are part of the moon. You know, it's a whole other system in addition to the astrology system. Nakshatras are tied in with the moon, and there's smaller little portions in the sky. And for example, you can use those literally on a daily basis. Or, for example, one time I lost something, I couldn't find it, so I looked at whatever planet would rule that, and I looked at the nakshatra and I tracked it by looking at what that nakshatra would represent and what house it was in and what sign it was in. And those are really fun. There's a lot of great little apps out there. One fun thing you could do is get an app called Rahu Call, and I'll post this out on your page so people will know what it is. And it'll give you four times during the day. It'll give you the most inauspicious and the most auspicious time to do stuff. So, for example, if your listeners are releasing advertisements for their business at a certain time, they can look at one of those four times and see what would be the most auspicious time to do it. And if they release that ad on that most auspicious time, chances are they're going to get better feedback, they're going to get a better response to that ad. And that is something where all you got to do is buy an app and put it on your phone.
Wow.
So that's it's a fun little thing people can do. But if it's okay with you, I'll post it out on Facebook. And can go take a look at it.
Have you tried it yourself, Angela?
Yeah, I use it all the time.
it works pretty good, huh?
It works pretty good. I mean, it's not
awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you
but
for sharing. That's awesome. Yeah. Hopefully our listeners and all of us can maybe benefit if you're, you know, try and work it and see what happens.
Yeah, it does make a difference, you know. And the other thing that listeners can do is they can find out. Mercury retrogrades are published all over the place. You go on Facebook, everyone's announcing when Mercury retrograde is going to happen. When that happens, go to your working calendar, mark out those dates, and do not initiate anything new in those windows. Just
really?
Yes, so whenever you see that Mercury retrograde energy, just block that out on your calendar and write, do not initiate anything new. You know, no, it's a good time for cleaning your garage, you know, taking stuff to Goodwill, or better yet, putting stuff in boxes that you're going to donate and put those in your garage, because chances are you're going to want to keep some of that stuff when Mercury goes direct. but just use it for cleaning. Clean your office, reorganize your files. If you've been working on that, it's the time for maintenance, basically. So use that time for maintenance, and you'll be just fine.
You know, sometimes, you know, and I'm sure everybody has who's listening, is that when you get on and you start, you start your day, and just seems like it just everything's off. You know, you spill things. You have a cup of coffee, water or coffee's all over the place. Then you end up tripping. Then you're running late. You know, it just goes on, and I don't know, but maybe that could be prevented if you pay attention to what the thing you were just talking about.
Well, you know, whenever that starts to happen, do pay attention, because you'll notice at a certain time, like maybe your day started rough, and then all of a sudden at 2 o'clock you feel a whole heck of a lot better. That means the moon just changed nakshatras and went into a softer nakshatra. Like, I remember one time I came walking into my office, and somebody I work with was kind of upset that day, and I said, "What's wrong?" And she was just under a lot of pressure, and she was a little teary. And so I went and I looked at her chart, and I said, "You know what? You're going to feel better in 17 minutes. Don't even worry about it." No joke. 17 minutes later, 18 minutes later, she comes in. She goes, "You know what? I do feel better." I mean, that's how powerful this stuff can be. So, you know, pay attention. And if you notice that all of a sudden you're feeling better at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, that means that the moon changed signs. The moon is so powerful on a daily basis. That's what you want to pay attention to on a daily basis.
Now, wow. I'm using the wonderful magic of the internet to figure out when the next Mercury retrograde is. And according to what I'm looking at right now, it's December 3rd through the 23rd this year.
Yes, we are having a Mercury. Yeah, we are. We're having a Mercury retrograde during the Christmas holiday rush. This is going to be a little bit rough on stores that sell things, like wherever they get Christmas shoppers. They're probably going to see, it's probably going to be a little slower shopping season. Mercury does go direct right before Christmas, so we're going to see probably a last-minute rush on gifts more than normal. And if people do a lot of shopping on the retrograde, the return counter is going to be really busy after Christmas.
I'm glad I don't work in retail. Is it going to be like, you know, all those people getting stampeded on, you know, when they're shopping? I see those videos on YouTube where people go crazy. People are amazing. It's incredible.
You know, I never shop like that. I never do the Black Fridays or anything like that. I've seen those videos too. They frighten me. They remind me of that soundbite you ran right when you were starting your show. I encourage people maybe to try shopping a little early this year and getting that stuff done, because it's going to be really tough to shop on that retrograde.
Well, I'm always broke, so I don't have to worry about shopping. that's not really true. But so I know we have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure to give you an opportunity to let everybody know if they want to contact you or get their chart done. How would they go about doing that?
Sure. People can reach me. There's two locations. Well, three, actually. They can go to Facebook and find Angela Pennington on Facebook and just message me there. Or they can go to angelapennington.com. That's my website. Or they can find me through 3silverbroomsticks.com. That is where my office is located. And I'm really close to the South Center Mall in the state of Washington. So any of those places, people can get a hold of me.
Awesome. Well, we still have a couple minutes. And so how long does it take to do? Are there varying degrees of charts? Like, is there like a short version or a long version? Now, I remember we have had an astrologist on this show before. And as I recall, this was a long time ago. They did some really in-depth chart on me, and I can't remember the details of it. But are there like varying degrees, levels of doing the charts?
Oh, absolutely. I can answer just questions like if someone, I start at $2 a minute with a minimum of 10 minutes, where I'll just answer one question. Someone can ask me, usually it's relationship or money, but people will ask me a question and I just look at the significations in the chart that cover that particular subject, and I can give them an answer. I can also do a natal chart. I don't really like doing natal charts on people that are over 35 or 40 because they pretty much know who they are at that point. But I do solar annual yearly reports where we can look in depth at how their year is going to look and what they, you know, key dates for certain things, you know, when things will lighten up, when things will get a little tougher, they might face a challenge and what they should do to manage that time frame. And you know, just general chart readings on a certain area of life. Maybe someone's trying to improve their relationship with their partner and they want to look at a synastry chart with them. We can do that. And there's just all sorts of things. And the depth of it really depends on the client, to be honest with you. Chart readings can range in price anywhere from $2 a minute up to $225, just depending on what they need. Oh, I
Excellent.
Do always give a written report, though, along with a recorded session. So.
Oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, we are about out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us the astrology and what you do. It's very interesting. And like I said earlier, I believe that, you know, the planets do affect us in probably a lot of ways that we were not aware of. I mean, it makes sense. And so I want to thank you so much for sharing that with us tonight on Paranormal Horizons.
Thank you so much for having me, and I wish you both all the best.
Yes, thank you, Angela. We learned a lot. It was so interesting. Never covered it, and I didn't even know about Vedic astrology. That is so cool. I'm glad you were able to go and share with our listeners and share with us. Thank you for your time. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys, too. Thanks for all your hard work.
Thank you, and we'll be in touch. Take care, girl.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Angela.
Hey, next week another celebrity is coming back, a very well-known, very, very much on demand, Stan Gordon. We're going to talk about the Thunderbirds. So I was reading earlier, Jason, and they were talking about maybe, is it Mothman or Thunderbirds? Are they a prehistoric, they're extinct prehistoric dinosaurs, but that was one of the things I was reading. Is it possible that these Mothman or Thunderbirds could be somehow related to the prehistoric dinosaurs? It's pretty interesting to think about that.
When you said Thunderbirds, the first thing that popped in my head was the, you know, there's the Blue Angels that, you know, fly the jets, but there's also the Thunderbirds. I don't know if it's the Air Force or the Navy. That's what I thought of. So Thunderbirds, Thunderbirds?
I have no idea. Huge birds. They're gigantic. They're like the Mothman, but they're huge. I'm not sure, and I'm going to have to stand. We can ask him tomorrow, I mean next week. Are they humanoids? Are they part humanoids? I have no idea. That'd be something interesting to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think back to we've done about 172 shows, and I don't think we've ever talked about Thunderbirds, so that will be great.
Yes, very much so. So we'll have Stan Gordon coming back. That will be for next week. And then the week after, we are going to have Joe Panohu from the Hawaiian group. He's a tour guide, is very well versed in the Hawaiian culture. And he is Hawaiian himself. Very good, wonderful personal friend of mine. He's been on air on radio from the UK to other couple stations, and we're going to have Joe to talk about something new, and he's going to spread a little bit of aloha and to our listeners from Hawaii.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, unless you have anything else, I think we'll wrap it up. I want to thank everybody.
Nothing to talk about. I'm just really, really I'm just really happy that the show is continuing, and I want to personally, Jason and I, if you look at our Facebook page on Paranormal Horizons, I've decided to feature as of last Monday, it's just 5 days a week, I've featured Behind the Voice. You get to see a profile of these people that are our guests, and it's good to be able to thank them for spending their time and for them to be able to go and share what they know to all of us.
Yeah, that's so great you did that, to put faces to the guests. That awesome. Thank you for all that hard work doing that.
Oh, I love it. It's great. It's a good win-win situation. I love win-win. So it makes it everybody, even our listeners, get to see the voices, see the faces behind the voices on our radio station. So I want to thank KITC and KNCP for their part in broadcasting our show on Thursday night from 7:30 to 8:30. Is that right, Jason?
That's right.
All right.
Absolutely. We want to thank them. And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. And give us a like on Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And we'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another show. And with that, Sherry, I'm going to close the show with a little promo for our friend Edwin Becker, who's the author of True Haunting and who put together that little comedy piece when we started.
That's wonderful.
So
hey, everybody, take care, stay safe, be warm, love everybody, and peace.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I'm author Edwin F. Becker. In 1971, there was a Chicago haunting so horrific that it was the first ever paranormal event televised by NBC, and a glimpse of a true exorcism. My book, True Haunting, tells the story. It is one that nearly destroyed my life and did destroy the lives of others. True Haunting is available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or you can visit me at edwinbecker.com.